swing of the late column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Inside, Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 456. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phil's first spring training game of the season. Baseball is officially back here in 2021 with some fans in the stands down in Florida. So we'll get into all that coming up here in the next few minutes. We'll talk a little bit about the game action, but really we're just ready to talk some Phil's baseball here as the season gets underway. And we're going to talk about what our favorite lineup would be. I guess favorite is like not the right word, but like what lineup we would like to see this team open the season with, and maybe the starting rotation this team should open the season with when the season begins here in just a few weeks. And joining me as they do every Sunday, and except the last couple Sundays when I wasn't here, is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Baseball Prospectus and all the podcasts he does for us at The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how are you, my friend?
Yes, joining us this week on Hittin' Season is John Stolness, one of our favorite guests. Thanks for joining us, John. It's been a wild couple of weeks. I didn't bother to check what the audience response is through our complex surveying method.
How could it help? Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm confident in saying the numbers were off the charts.
I think they probably were. I have no doubt about that.
Well, I'm glad you got back in time to watch the Phillies play a game today that I enjoyed every second of, and I mean that not sarcastically whatsoever.
No.
This game was important, I think, for a lot of reasons. The main one being it was baseball being played. I can't say it's smart to have people in the stands, but I can say that it's happening, and the reaction that this Phillies team got was really important, I think, for the people who were there, really important for the people listening on the, I think we only had access to, a Tigers radio broadcast today?
Just audio today.
Yeah, but even so, just knowing that fans were there to boo, that a maskless man had to be escorted out as he was screaming at the team, you know, put a mask on, put a mask on, you idiot, but whatever.
We don't mind if you scream, just do it with a mask on.
Just important, I think, therapeutically for all of us, because like I said, it's not like we stopped booing, it's just we couldn't hear each other, and it was like getting lost in the dark, and now we're able to you know, recalibrate and rediscover that we're able to convey our frustrations with this team. Hopefully those frustrations are fewer this year, but as Lindsay Adler at The Athletic was tweeting today, it might be a lot easier to hear individual fans yelling at people during games this year, and I got to tell you that's going to do a lot for us. That's going to be the exact kind of we got some time to make up for here, and I think this is going to do it.
It's going to be some solid content, no doubt about it. Liz Rocher, of course, from Yahoo Sports. You know Liz from all the great work she does there at Yahoo. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher and all the great podcast work she does for us, too. Liz, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I don't have anything as eloquent to say as Justin, but I'm glad to have you back, John.
It is so good to be back, and I just, before we jump into everything, I did just want to take a second to thank Justin and Liz for filling in for me these last few weeks. It has been an extremely crazy last few weeks, personally on the job front for me, and that's the main reason that I was away, is that it was kind of one of those things where you start a new thing and it just kind of soaking up all of your time and attention. And I knew that you guys would be able to handle this wonderfully without me around, and it was such a relief to be able to just kind of put it aside for a few weeks while I was dealing with that other thing, to be able to know that these podcasts and the shows and everything else that we do was being taken care of. So thank you both so much for doing that. You guys are great friends. I'm really lucky to have you, and I really appreciate you both. So thank you.
We love you.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, so, but I am so happy to be back to talking some Phillies baseball, and so let's jump into it. And of course, the Phillies played their first spring training game of the year here on Sunday afternoon against the Detroit Tigers. Phils lost 10-2. six runs scored in the first inning for Detroit, and the Phillies only got two outs. It's not good when the first inning of the 2021 season, the manager has to raise the white flag because the pitchers had thrown too many pitches, and they were not able to get the requisite three outs. But that's the beauty of spring training, I guess, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is if they want to do this for all innings that look like this for the Phillies moving forward, I would love for the manager to come equipped with a little button that just says end this on it.
I'm and done.
Just to be able to jam his thumb under that button anytime an inning like that comes along, it's going to be great. And this was a great, I think, experiment in using that technology. And I think finally we found a melding of the Phillies and technology that works and is productive. And that is, we found technology that creates less baseball. And I think that's really important.
That's what we all want.
See, Justin, I would have thought that this would have been just something like a horrible idea, a horrible invention for you as the host of the Dirty Inning. If a manager can just push a button and said, please, heavens, no more, you're gonna have fewer dirty innings to choose from.
It's spring training.
Well, on the one hand, I would say
so.
This is a way for innings like this to stand out, knowing that, oh yeah, given the circumstances, the manager, the team was not able to get three outs and the manager had to manually end the inning. This is probably an inning we'll come back to in future years. But also, yeah, we're not in any danger of running out of material from the pre-button ending inning era of baseball.
Correct. And yes, you're right, Liz. It was spring training, and I don't care if they let them do two outs, three outs, four outs. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Yeah, like
right?
My God. Like, the button should say mercy, because it's spring training. We're excited about it for a couple of days, and then it's just like, dear God, none of this means anything. None of this means anything. If they have the best record, they'll get a trophy. They won't get a trophy. It'll just be like a little asterisk. It won't even be that.
Do you not get like a big juicy grapefruit?
God, I wish.
Winning the grapefruit league, like a grocery cart full of grapefruits.
Like,
did you see that the Phillies Twitter account said grapefruit league champions today? I mean, I'm sure it was like a tongue in cheek.
Oh, it was, because they lost 10-2.
Yeah.
But they were 14-5 last time we were doing this, and they got shut down. They were easily the top of the Grapefruit League. So if anything, they were the defending COVID-shortened Grapefruit League champions. And frankly, I don't think you're going to be able to fit that all on one banner.
No, probably not. But I agree with you that the Grapefruit trophy is exactly the way it should go. I mean, why not at this point? This team is a 9-year playoff drought. No, don't turn down any hardware you get handed to you at this point.
Well, and why doesn't the Grapefruit Commission, you know, or whoever that, you know, the Grapefruit Growers of Florida sponsor the Grapefruit League and give the winner a trophy and a big old crate of grapefruits?
Oh, man. I'm also upset about this now, too.
Like, listen, I'm not one to be like, let's infuse more capital into this capitalist thing, but it's called the Grapefruit League. Why hasn't Minute Maid stepped up?
But does anyone enjoy grapefruit? Like, really?
I do.
Mean, people
Grapefruit's
eat grapefruit
delicious.
Because I think. Do you really?
No,
do you
I'm
put
a
sugar
John.
On it?
I'm a John on this one.
I'm also a weirdo who used to eat like lemons without any sugar. Like, I love tart. I love tart sour fruit. So I'm a huge fan.
Okay. Well, that's
you broil
me
it.
Something.
Broiling it underneath the grill is really great.
Broiling
broiled
a lemon?
Grapefruit?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about grapefruit.
Yes, broiling a grapefruit. You cut it in half, then you put it under the broiler. It's delicious.
Yeah, I don't. That must be a Maine. That's like
it's
a Maine
not.
Thing.
Oh,
they do up there in the compounds of Maine.
Compounds
where grew
of
up.
Maine. Make it sound like we're one giant state of Branch Davidians.
I'm
not saying that at all.
Oh, are you not? I'm sorry. I must have misunderstood you. Compounds.
I'm in the process of composing a "That Ain't It, Chief" tweet right now, directed at you, Liz. So here's the lineup for the game today. You'll recognize the first three names: Adam Haseley, Scott Kingery, Alec Bohm, all in the starting lineup today. Started the game, and then the catcher Mathis was the cleanup hitter today. Of course, we're talking about well-known Jeff Mathis, whose name was misspelled, I believe, on the scoreboard down in Florida today.
How?
Jen- because I guess it was in Detroit. It was M-A-T-H-A-S is how it was spelled.
Old math ass.
Math ass, yes. Jankowski, Chatham, Mickey Moniak, and Rafael Marchand. And Derek Hall was the nine-hole hitter. So, I mean, we were not exactly putting out the A squad here in this game. And that's okay, because the first spring training game, that's not what it's all about. It's just about, you know, it's getting out there and just having some fun with it, you know? I mean, Ivan Nova was the first Phillies pitcher of the season. The guy they signed to a minor league deal, former New York Yankee, played under Joe Girardi for a number of years. And, again, he was unable to get out of the first inning. Kind of a rough start, but you know, we're not going to hammer these guys for the first spring training game. And,
no, the Tigers took care of that.
No, I mean, the most we'll talk about is that, well, this seems like a bad omen.
Could be that the first inning of the 2021 season, but we're obviously not going to, you know, cast aspersions on the whole season because of this pretty awful, dirty inning of a first inning in spring training.
Oh, so
but
we're
it
not
was
doing
pretty
that.
Good. No, we're not okay. doing that. No, well, you're more than welcome to.
I have no plans.
Okay.
I think it was perfect, frankly. I think, first of all, this early in the spring, we're obviously going to see a lot of guys who are destined for a bullpen somewhere. You're not going to see a lot of, you know, many of the five guys who are going to make up the Phillies' actual rotation this year for a little bit, at least. Certainly not for very long amounts of time. So we're all looking at basically Phillies'
bullpen.
Aaron
Nola's pitching on Monday.
So then I'm going to rewind that and say, well, that's why I threw in the part about not for very long
for very
amounts
long.
Of time.
Yes, for very long. You're right.
My point being, this team's bullpen was going to be scrutinized, and people weren't going to be able to. They needed a disaster like this. They needed a meltdown like this from the Phillies pitching staff to get past that, to make their first jokes about how nothing had changed, how this was typical, how, oh, I thought things were going to be different. Like, we needed that just to do it and get past it, and it was the first thing they did. The first thing they did was just get absolutely destroyed by another team's weak offense. And, you know, and people, you know, they made everyone rush to get through the same door at the same time, collided, and then one by one, everyone made their jokes, and we all moved on with the day. And it won't be the last time the Phillies pitching staff really blows a game or gets blown out of the water, but I'm glad it happened immediately. I'm glad people got to boo at it. I felt like it was just, again, we were very backed up in this regard. So I'm glad this was the first thing that happened, because it needed to happen at some point.
I bet it felt so good to boo the Phillies.
Yeah.
I love how that's what we're all dreaming about. Not cheering them. It's like, man, it would feel good to boo them, because we've got so many boos stirred up from last year.
We do, and it's no fun to boo at your family. You know, they don't know what to do with
it. It's not.
You know,
there's just no reaction that they have for that, for getting booed in person like that.
No.
Yeah.
No. And when you boo your 5-year-old too long, it starts to do some damage emotionally. I think so. You really have to be careful how far you push that. Adam Haseley goes opposite field in the first inning, though, with the awful left-hander for a home run. Apparently, he came into camp all swolled this year. Beefed up, that's right. I guess, where are you guys at on Adam Haseley at this point? I know we've talked about center field, and I'm sure you guys have talked about center field over the last few weeks. It's going to be one of the big camp battles here over the next few weeks. Who wins the center field job? Do you think one guy gets it? What are the chances it's Adam Haseley?
John, have you not been listening to our podcasts? Is that what I'm supposed to get?
No, I've heard them all.
Oh, yeah, maybe you guys have talked about this.
I've heard all of them.
Sure. No, that's no problem. I've been on Adam Haseley's team for a little bit here, and I can't say it's ever been because I'm completely enamored with the kind of player he is, but looking at the options the Phillies have for center field and what we were able to see from Haseley before baseball got really weird, I felt was really promising. I felt like he was on the verge of coming into the best form of a Citizens Bank Park center fielder as he was going to be. Whether that was somebody who was good enough for that job was going to be determined, but he was about to be at the peak of his talents as the Phillies center fielder. Whether that would mean it was going to be his job for a while or not, that's what we're kind of waiting to find out. And I'm hoping that's what we can find out this year, because you're right. He showed up, I think he gained like 15 pounds of muscle, they said. And yeah, he came in knowing that this was one of the jobs they had available and that he was one of the main candidates for it. And as far as I can tell, he's still the best suited guy for the job. I think, you know, other options have different strengths, and Scott Kingery and Roman Quinn. But I still think we haven't seen what Adam Haseley can do for an extended period of time with center field just being his job. So hitting that home run today, hey, you know, it's one game, it's one day. He had a great day at the plate, by the way, beyond the home run. I think he had a walk and three hard hit balls that were all lineouts. But yeah, he was obviously seeing the ball and came back strong. And after one day, I have not changed my opinion on Adam Haseley. So that was cool to see.
CL is Adam Haseley, opening day center fielder, according to Justin. So, what do you, well, where
I'll,
are you at?
I'll say it, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I have no problem with that. I mean, who else are they putting there?
Yeah, Kingery would probably be the only other option.
Sure. I mean, either of them are fine. I'm not terribly concerned about it. You know, they've got a bunch of dudes they can just plug in there, and I would love to see Adam Haseley figure some stuff out. You know, I would also love Scott Kingery to do the same thing, whichever one figures it out first and for longest. I'm excited for them.
How badly do the Phillies want Adam Haseley to figure it out? I mean, obviously they want both of those guys in Kingery and Haseley to do it, but I mean, just as like farmhand success stories, to be able to point to them and change the narrative somewhat as far as their farm system goes for this current era of Phillies offense. Man, how much do they want their high pick in the draft, Haseley, to wind up being their starting center fielder and actually look like a real contributor for this team? I'm sure they're very anxious to see whatever he's going to do, too.
Really a lot.
Well, here's an interesting question. Okay, so you're right. They spent a first-round pick on Adam Haseley. What was it, number 9 overall or 8 overall? I forget, but it was like a top 10 pick they spent on Adam Haseley. So they took him early. But again, that was Matt Klentak. So it didn't have anything to do with Dave Dombrowski. So he's not really invested in that first round pick. Scott Kingery, they gave major league money to before he ever played a single game in the big leagues. And they're still paying him that contract. So who do you think they, if you kind of put the, you know, a truth serum underneath Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton, among the many questions you would ask them, what do you think they would prefer? Like, just based on what the team has invested in these two guys so far, Haseley or Kingery? I think they might have more invested in Kingery given how much money they've given him.
Yeah, I think they thought he was going to be a more important character in this to this point. And I think through a lot of fault that wasn't on him, you know, that hasn't exactly worked out. Some of it is more on him, but obviously we know he had COVID last year, and you know, his job has always been up in the air, and we learned already this year going in that he's going to be filling a variety of roles for the Phillies as well. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, how many years into his 6-year deal are we now? 3?
This is 4. This is year number 4.
So this will be year 4. Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, they may not have the personal appreciation for him, not having drafted him, but in the case of Kingery, somebody who's still reaping the benefits of that, of being granted a 6-year extension. Yeah, I would say Kingery too, just because I think he was going to be the crux of the plan at one point. I think he was here to complement Hoskins as far as like new guys who were going to be big contributors moving forward. And I think the Phillies put a lot on his shoulders, and it didn't necessarily work out. But I think they would rather see success from Kingery. They'd rather see a comeback season or an establishment season where he kind of is able to contribute in a more meaningful way, even though he doesn't, you know, even though he's getting moved around a lot. I think at this point he's going to be more of a veteran than a rookie, and so he's going to have the experience having the kind of job he has, and while I'm not saying it isn't difficult, he's probably got to be a little more used to it by now. So he doesn't have to be a 300 hitter all season long. He doesn't have to hit 30 home runs or anything. He's got to be he can be a low in the lineup kind of guy who gets on base and steals bases and covers a lot of ground up the middle, depending on where he's playing. But like, yeah, I think he's somebody that if he was as good as the Phillies envisioned him being when they gave him that deal, he would have been a much, much more important part of this team. Unfortunately, yeah, that's just luck and poor foresight has kind of made his job and reputation a little harder to predict.
What do you think, Liz? If they could choose between one of these two guys, given what they've invested and spent already in them?
I mean, I would agree that it's Kingery, but I have a tough time seeing that they want it to be Kingery, because unless they're really crossing their fingers that he'll work out as a, you know, multi-position dude still, why aren't they just giving him a position outright? Why aren't they just putting
just
him at his
giving him
why
center.
Aren't they just putting him yeah. or not center, putting him at second base where he's trained to play? Like, it's been years, and yet I'm sure he still knows that position better than any other. Like, if they really cared about making good on that investment, they would have done that by now. And that's why it continues to frustrate me, because it's like, if they wanted him to succeed, they'd be helping him do it. They might just see his money now as a sunk cost and, you know, moving on.
I think that's what it is.
I hate it. Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think that the idea of Scott Kingery as the everyday second baseman scared them from an offensive standpoint. You know, I think Gene Segura at second base, whatever you think of Gene Segura, he's a better offensive player than Scott Kingery over the last few years. And so I was certainly nervous with a middle infield of Scott Kingery starting every day at second base. And I certainly wouldn't mind if he wins the job in spring training, him winning the center field job and playing in center field every day, because I think he could play that position pretty well. But I agree with you, Liz. I think ideally, if Scott Kingery were a decent offensive player, second base every day would be a great spot for him. But
they haven't given him the chance. That's my point, is that they haven't really given him the chance to play at one position in a season, not moving around, not going 2-3 days without playing between, you know, one or two starts. Like, actually saying, all right, we're going to try this for a couple of months. We're going to have you play second base. We're going to put you in the lineup. We're going to see if it works now that you don't have COVID. He also said he came to camp too swole last year. Those are the words that were used. And he's shed some of that muscle. So this is like the best time. This is the best time to figure it out. This is one of the only things left from this team, from this previous era, that we need to really figure out. Like, Rhys Hoskins, we know who he is because he's gotten every chance to play, and he's done that. They put him at first, you know, they put him in, where is it, left field? But then they moved him to first base, where he's supposed to play. It baffles me and frustrates me that they're still moving Kingery around, because that's the one thing that tells me that they don't care anymore. I think if they could get rid of him in a trade, they would, but I don't think they will, because he hasn't shown that he's worth it enough. I think if they did end up trading him, they'd have to take on some money.
I think he was part of a plan that doesn't exist anymore, and now they have this guy who still could be an effective major leaguer who can play multiple positions. Probably, I don't know. I want to say in the highest estimation, probably better than like a bench bat, what you consider in that role. But like, I don't know. At this point, are we just hanging on because like the deal is in place, like the extension is what it is? I don't think that this group is as desperate for him to be successful because they didn't draft him and he wasn't a part of their plans.
Right.
So now
he's just
here. And I like Scott Kingery and want him to succeed, but clearly they've always struggled to find a way to fit him in.
And when he has played, he has struggled to play well offensively. And you know, again, last year with the COVID situation, it certainly may not have been his fault. But it'll be interesting to see over the course of the spring how the playing time is divvied up in center field, because it sounds like Joe Girardi wants to give all three of those guys a real shot to win it. And no one played well last year in center field, so it's not like anybody has a leg up on that job. So Adam Haseley strikes the first blow in the first game of spring training with the home run in the first inning. And like Justin mentioned, had a very good day at the plate. And we saw a couple years ago that he could be a very good defensive player in center field. So Adam Haseley with the very, very early lead in the job for center field, just one game into the spring training schedule. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about what we think is our ideal opening day lineup and the five-man starting rotation each of us would like to see this team or think this team could start the season with, should start the season with on opening day. We'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we're going to just kind of jump forward a little bit here. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of spring training games to be played over the next few weeks. So we want to just be kind of looking ahead to opening day and look at this lineup, which I think is going to be among the better lineups in the National League. And a lot of different ways this batting order could go this year. A lot of different ways, a lot of different options the Phillies have to slot guys in different spots. And I kind of thought it would be fun to look at what we think would be the best opening day lineup. And I haven't looked to see, you know, what pitcher they might be facing on opening day. I just kind of want to look at the players themselves and see what would be their ideal starting lineup. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, what it would be, who they were facing on opening day. Just given the roster, what's the ideal roster lineup construction for the guys that they have in here? So let me start off with you, Justin. The ideal lineup for this Phillies team, if you could put together a lineup, what would it look like?
I keep Andrew McCutchen leading off because I think a true leadoff hitter is something of an endangered species, and I don't think every roster necessarily has one. And there's some interesting things to do with this position, I think, with the Phillies, but nothing that seems like it'd be anything more than what like a manager would try for a day or something. So I don't know, who else do you consider a competent leadoff hitter for the Phillies who could take Kutch's job at the top of the
order? I think he's it.
Yeah, I do too. I can't think of anybody else that you would put in that spot.
Right. I mean, like, honestly, you put Harper anywhere because he's a producer. You could put him at the top of the lineup, fine. But, like, I don't know. You want him in that three spot more than anywhere else. Like, that's one of those ones I think is etched in stone at this point.
I agree.
So I think you go Kutch. You trust Alec Boehm enough to fill in that two slot. And then Harper, Hoskins cleaning up, Realmuto hitting fifth. Didi's behind JT, Segura at seven, and Adam Haseley in the eight spot. If this team needs a DH, I think that's what you get Brad Miller for, I guess. But also you can play around and have Hoskins be the DH and let Boehm play first. You're not really losing a whole lot of defense there, and obviously this team hasn't really prioritized first base defense because, come on. So yeah, I think that's where I land with the lineup. Opening day lineup, that's more or less something of that ilk is what I'm imagining.
I have no arguments. Like because the Harper hot, like that middle part is kind of what it is. I don't know how else you'd really arrange this in an advantageous way. Like, are there how many other ways I think could you do this ideally? I'm not seeing really.
Let's go about it this way. How many spots in this order do you consider spoken for, pretty much? Like, if we're saying Kutch is good in the leadoff spot, Harper doesn't really leave the three spot. If you're not batting Hoskins cleanup, I'm not sure where else you want to put him.
Well, see, I don't have Harper at number three. I have Harper as my two guy.
Really?
There you go. All right.
Yeah, I have McCutchen as my leadoff guy. And frankly, if Roman Quinn were to ever show me something, Roman Quinn or Scott Kingery are your ideal leadoff guys, but they just have never shown anything with the bat. So I think McCutchen has to enter the season as the leadoff guy. And I've got Harper batted two most of last year, and I keep him there. I like having the lefty in between the two righties. So I go McCutchen, Harper, Hoskins, and then I'm hitting Gregorius four. I think Gregorius was among the most consistent power bats on the bench. He's a lefty, and that breaks up another righty combination in Hoskins and Realmuto. So I go McCutchen, Harper, righty-lefty, Hoskins, Gregorius, righty-lefty, Realmuto, righty, Alec Boehm, Gene Segura, Scott Kingery, or Adam Haseley. I guess I'm going Adam Haseley in center field. I initially had Kingery, and now I feel like I want Adam Haseley to win that job. So I'll put Adam Haseley there.
I like having Gregorius for. That's not something I'd thought of.
Where did you put Boehm?
I have Boehm at six.
Six, okay. Yeah, those are all cast correctly. I don't have any particular problem with that. When I'm doing this, I never prioritize separating lefties and righties, but yours accomplishes that.
I don't think that's as big a deal, honestly, but I just thought, hey, when you can do it and it makes sense, it's a good thing to do. But, you know, this team has so few left-handed hitters that, you know, I was trying to find a little bit of balance in the lineup, but I think that's a little overblown, but I wanted to try and make it work if I could. And I thought that lineup made a little bit more sense with by being able to split some of those guys up.
Yeah. No disagreements. Like, I have a tough time constructing a lineup like this ahead, you know, before you can do it initially, but I usually like to see how guys actually do. Like, I have a bigger opinion on where everyone should be after like three games, four games. you know, because that's when I think you can start moving guys around depending on how they've looked against pitching, depending on, you know, the handedness of the pitcher and that type of thing.
No, for sure. And like I said, I didn't bother to look to try and figure out who they would be facing on opening day or anything like that. But I think given I still am not sold on McCutchen at the leadoff spot. You know, I wasn't sold on him going into last year because of the ACL. They say he's moving around a lot better here early in spring, and that makes sense being that he's another year removed from the ACL surgery. But he's not an ideal leadoff guy because I'm not sure that what we saw that first month and a half in 2019 is actually what we're ever going to see again. So I still think that is a problem for this team. I think that's probably the biggest concern I have is really the top of the lineup. And then, you know, in center field, whether it's Haseley or Kingery or whatever, you're hitting them eighth. So you don't, like you said, you don't need a ton of offensive production from those guys right there. But I think the top of the lineup is going to be dicey. I'm not sure McCutchen's going to give you that 350, 360 on base percentage that you really are looking for from a leadoff hitter.
Those are fighting words to Justin.
No, what? No, I was saying I don't think this team, like many teams, has a legit leadoff hitter. And McCutchen definitely is their leadoff hitter. But as far as like, yeah, he's far from ideal at this point. Like he's somebody who can. Still, if you could combine his ability to you know hit the ball with the legs of a Kingery or Roman Quinn, then like John's saying, that would be ideal. But at this point, you're just kind of looking at the names in the hat, not names in a hat, but looking at the names on the board and saying, okay, well, who else could it even be? So yeah, I mean, where do you slot McCutchen if he's not in the leadoff spot? Where did you have him? Oh, you had him at number one, but like,
yeah,
where do you wind up putting him then? Like. Six, seven.
Yeah,
I want to say
something like that. I mean, yeah. Maybe you put Bohm at the top and swap those two guys out, but that doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. So,
yeah,
I agree. I think he has to hit there, and if he doesn't hit there, he's probably hitting six or seven, because he just doesn't provide enough power to hit any higher in the lineup than that. So, yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts on the lineup? And before we move over to the starting rotation.
How do you feel, you know, now that we've worked the lineup out, how do you feel this lineup stands against you mentioned opening day. The first two teams, I think the Phillies are playing the Mets and Braves 13 times to start the season.
Oh,
I think that's how it works out. So, yeah, how does this lineup stack up against the first two lineups they're going to see to start the season?
I mean, I think it's close to as good as New York's. Atlanta's lineup with Ozzie Albies and with Acuna and Freddie Freeman, they just have a few more high-end superstars in there that scare the crap out of me. I know Francisco Lindor in New York, too. That's also a huge ad. I think, you know, if we kind of get a better sense of what Pete Alonso is going to do this year, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to replicate that 50-some-odd home run season he had in his rookie year, but I think he kind of struggled a little bit last year. It depends kind of what season they get, what kind of season Dominic Smith gives them. So I think I like the Phillies lineup a little better than the Mets lineup, but I don't know that I like him better than Atlanta's. But I don't think it's a big difference between the two.
I'd agree with that. I think Lindor is the one thing that makes the Mets, if it does make them better, that's what it is that makes them better. Because I think Pete Alonso greatly benefited from the crazy bonkers bouncy ball. A couple years ago, and that's why he had such huge success with home runs that he hasn't been able to replicate. And this year, they're deadening the ball even more. So let's keep that in mind. Like, I want to make sure everyone keeps that in mind when we're looking at numbers early on, that like it's not that people are underperforming. It's that this could be the new level of where things are because MLB is choosing to involve itself in the game for some reason.
Well, and I forget about guys, too, like Jeff McNeil, who's really turned into one of the better pure hitters in the National League. And who's the outfielder?
Conforto.
Yeah, thank you. Michael Conforto is always really good. So, you know, I mean, New York does have a good lineup, but I would probably take the Phils lineup over the Mets lineup at the moment. But maybe it's closer than I thought because I kind of forgot about Jeff McNeil until I started thinking.
Yeah, you said him. Well, like, I like him, but, you know, he's really good. But I also... I want to see him do it again because he's one of those guys that I just don't believe. Like Daniel Murphy, I kept waiting for him to bottom out like for a couple of years. And like, this doesn't seem like it's a thing. Everyone thinks it is and it looks like it is, but I don't think it's a thing.
And if you're talking about top of the order being dicey for the Phillies, playing the Braves and facing Acuna, Freeman, and Ozuna to start a game, it's like they've definitely got you beat there. And like you said about Albies, I want to say I'm a fan. We're getting too close to the regular season for me to say that I'm a fan of any of the Braves, yeah. But like. Yeah. You know, as a general, from a general baseball standpoint, he's another guy who's really fun to watch there. But I don't know. I think a lot of these teams, both of these teams have a few rattling parts in their lineup as well. I'm with you in that I probably project the Phillies somewhere between the two with the Braves higher up. But you know, a lot of the conversation around the Braves is just the same kind of conversation you see about all these other teams, which is like, yeah, you're expecting your Acunas and your Freemans to come through, but they're like, you know, seeing another great season from Dansby Swanson is going to mean the world for this team. It's like, yeah, but you got to see it first. He's got maybe one great MLB season under his belt, and wasn't it last year, which had obviously a different kind of year?
That didn't stop Trevor Bauer from getting himself a contract, now did it?
Well, it didn't stop Dansby Swanson from getting MVP votes either.
Oh, forgot
apparently.
About that. God.
No, right?
Now I'm just embarrassed.
Yeah, that was... Yeah.
So, yeah, no, just out of curiosity. Because, I think any of the lineups we're talking about, I don't think it's too hard to arrange a Phillies lineup at this point. I don't think we're looking at like five different guys who can bat anywhere in the order. I'm curious to see what Girardi puts out there most of the time, but this is a lineup. The Phillies have not been a team that has used the same lineup consistently, I don't think, like the past couple of years, whether it was Kapler or Girardi in charge. I feel like they used a lot of different lineups, and I think that's just how the game has gone as well. But it's also just a testament to the status of this team that they believe a little less in the value of certain guys in certain spots, or that they just didn't have the pieces to move around as much as they could have.
Yeah, and they really work on getting more guys more rest. You know, and so you have different lineups because you have guys sitting out, you know, especially a guy like McCutchen last year who was coming off a knee injury, and Segura and
Real
some
Muto.
Of these older Real Muto. I'm sure they would love to get him just a little bit more rest this year if he'll let them. So anyway, let's talk about some starting pitching here to finish off the show. Start with the rotation here, because I know we all know it's going to be Nola, it's going to be Zach Wheeler, and it's going to be Zach Eflin as the first three here. But the Phillies went out and they got a bunch of starting pitchers this offseason and to major league deals. And so they went out and they got some depth, which they sorely needed, but they're not going to be able to pitch all these guys. And so how do you guys see the back end of the rotation right now? Again, we got to see how these guys pitch in spring training. So it's too early to say who will be in the starting rotation, but all things being equal, after Nola, Wheeler, Eflin, how would you like to see the back of the rotation fill out, and do you foresee a six-man rotation this year?
I feel like Vince Velasquez makes his way into the rotation.
I don't want it.
Does it sound like I'm thrilled? I mean, we're continuing the Vince Velasquez conversation. They have been really reluctant to move him to the bullpen, and I think I mean, granted, Matt Klintak is not here anymore, but they always seemed really very much like they wanted to use him. So, I mean, otherwise it's Spencer Howard, Matt Moore, Chase Anderson. This is who we're looking at. And I don't have maybe Spencer Howard, I could have a decent feeling about him. But like, aside from Chris Jones constantly talking about how much he loves Matt Moore for no reason. I have no opinion. Like, my opinion on Matt Moore and Chase Anderson doesn't really exist until I see them pitch.
I think it shakes out with Howard and Velasquez at 4 and 5. I think that Velasquez is in the rotation not because he has a particularly stellar spring, but I think he just winds up looking better than their other options there. I think Chase Anderson and Matt Moore wind up making like like two starts each throughout the season. Because, John, I know the Phillies kind of veered away from a six-man rotation talk at the beginning. But I don't know. For some reason, I just feel like it's unavoidable at a certain point, especially when your guy who's coming in there, who, like, he's going to play a role in this pitching staff in a significant way, Vince Velasquez, a guy whose entire rep is burns through a lot of pitches, gets tired quick. So if he's filling a starting role, which I suspect he will for at least a portion of the season, then, you know, he's not the only one, you know, with a guy like Spencer Howard, a young pitcher who's got to, you know, he's got to learn a little bit more about managing stamina in the major leagues and looked how he looked last year. I think you're looking at a lot of guys who are going to throw a lot of pitches in not a lot of innings. So I think you wind up just from the physicality of a pitching staff like that, you're going to wind up in a 6-man rotation at some point throughout the year. I think that's just what we've seen from this pitching staff. And, you know, I don't know if a new pitching coach is really going to change that immediately. So, yeah, I think you do wind up seeing a 6-man rotation at some point. I feel like the Phillies are going to be reluctant to do that. And I think the two guys that are considered the 4 and 5 starters are Vince Velasquez and Spencer Howard. Anderson and Moore get some time in the sun, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think the 6-man rotation, they may not start the season with it, but like you said, I think they will, and I think a lot of teams are going to go with a 6-man rotation because of the lack of innings that everybody threw last year. Maybe this is just wishful thinking, but I did not put Vince Velasquez in my starting rotation here because I feel like they went out and they got Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, and I know they gave Vince Velasquez the contract that they did, but I think that was early in the season. I think that happened at a time when John Middleton didn't think he was going to spend a lot of money. And for some reason, once Dave Dombrowski got there, things changed. You know, he started spending money, and they spent money on some of these, you know, major league deals on guys like Matt Moore and Chase Anderson. And I think Dave Dombrowski gave those guys that money thinking they would be pitching pretty regularly with this team. And I think with a guy like Vince Velasquez, you can put him in the bullpen, just like he started the season last year in the bullpen, right? Didn't he start the season in the bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Vince Velasquez starts this season in the bullpen. I think that Matt Moore and Chase Anderson are probably your 4 and 5, and I think Spencer Howard is your 6. I think Spencer Howard, I think he gets a start every 5th or 6th day. I think he has too much potential and too much upside for them to kind of just put him in the bullpen. I don't think they want him to be a bullpen arm. So I think he's got to be in the starting rotation somehow, but it can't be every 5th day the whole season because his arm will fall off. So I think that they got these guys, signed them to major league deals because they believe they can pitch. Now, we'll see. I'm with you, Liz, with skepticism on Matt Moore, because he did it in Japan. Doesn't mean he's going to do it here in the States. And the last time he was here in the States, didn't go very well. Anderson was.
But I agree with you, though. Sorry, not to cut you off. I do agree with you that they got those guys to pitch. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because I think there's been a lot of space filling that's been mislabeled as depth with this team. But I think in the case of it, at least Matt Moore, and probably Anderson too, they were acquired because they knew they were going to use them. It wasn't like, you're here to win a job. It was like, you're here because you're going to get used. In what fashion exactly, we will determine. But yeah, I think Dombrowski wants to use those arms. And it's a very Dave Dombrowski thing to have starters regularly go 7 innings. He's said that that's something he likes to see from his pitchers, if he's old school in one way. And I like that too. But I just, again, I doubt the feasibility of it with this team, just because we haven't really seen a whole lot of it. And I'm eager to change the story there and just, you know, start seeing a rotation full of guys who routinely go deep into games. But it just hasn't been for so long, especially if you zero in on the back of the rotation. Yeah, you just don't see a lot there. But again, this was Dombrowski's first built pitching staff for the Phillies. So I think he didn't acquire these guys without intending to use them. But yeah, I'll stand by my hopeful reckoning that reasoning that Velasquez looks good enough to get that job. And I guess in the case of Howard, he blows people away. I think that's not off the table, but you know, I get why everyone's expectations are low. It's tough to mix in some optimism when you've been looking at the Phillies back of the rotation, same Phillies back of the rotation situation for years now.
Yeah. No, it's been a rough. I mean, the back of the rotation the last few years has been rough, but the
hasn't always been bad. It's just always been the same.
Yeah. It's been the same. No, that's very true. Thankfully, the front of the rotation does appear to be a strength, but you do need some good starts from those 4 and 5 guys if you're going to be successful during the course of a 162-game season. So we'll see if the Phillies end up going with a 6-man, if they stick with a 5-man, or if it's some hybrid, probably going to be some hybrid of the two as the season moves along. All right, time for final thoughts, guys. Justin, let me start with you. Final thoughts for this episode of the pod.
I don't have it in front of me, but I want to. I think the anniversary of Bryce Harper signing with the Phillies is tomorrow, perhaps.
I remember that day.
And yeah, I thought maybe it would be fun to ask you guys how much better you think the team is now from the day he signed. And then I thought, that's not a super fun question. Let's just ask that 10 years later, maybe in when we're doing the 1000th episode of Hitten Season. And we're all middle aged, not just yes. One of us.
Right. Hey, thanks. I appreciate that.
I didn't say who it was.
No, yeah, I had to, people would never know. that was quite a day, obviously. What was better, Merry Cliffness or Bryce Harper Day?
Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no.
I'd say
I was gonna say that too. I didn't want to shortchange Bryce Harper, but I mean, you get one player to make the team better. You get one player to turn your rotation into historically the best ever. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Honestly, now that I think about it, I think it's unarguable because the Cliffmas thing seemed to build out of a whisper of unexpected rumor. And in the case of Harper, you were like, well, it's going to be the Phillies or one other or two other teams. And then that was the report for 5 months. And then one afternoon, John Heyman was just like, it's the Phillies. And we were all like, oh, thank God. Not just that he'd signed in Philadelphia, but that it was over.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. No, that was it. It was more relief than anything else. Cliffmas was just pure elation and joy and surprise. So, I agree. It just popped into my head because those were the two big Twitter Phillies moments of the last 10 years, probably. So, as sad as that is. Liz, final thoughts from you?
I'm kind of afraid after all that. I want to recommend Justin's article on Baseball Prospectus. It's excellent. You should all read it right now.
Very good.
Those are my only final thoughts right now. Yep. That's all I got.
Well, thank
you're welcome.
I quote tweeted it. I think I quote tweeted it yesterday if I'm thinking of the right thing. So, but check out Justin's timeline. Check out my timeline. Check out Liz's timeline, and you'll find it there.
If there's anything I've learned in all these projections, it's that Braves fans are feeling very safe and rational about their teams. So if any of them are listening, they'll be pleased to know I'm also writing the Braves preview in a couple of weeks.
So
we're all going to enjoy that.
Yeah, we
one.
Are.
Justin, your Mike Matheny rant was art.
Beautiful. It's excellence.
It was art.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget to order the Baseball Prospectus Annual if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. Because that's where that essay appears. And, yeah, I actually read his manifesto to write that article.
You told me you were doing that. And I said, why? And you said, it's for Baseball Prospectus. I'm like, but why?
It's for research. Anyway, I threw it
my
out
my husband
when I
loved that rant so much, Justin, that he read it out loud to me, which is only he only does with every tweet he loves. So he absolutely. So you're in good company.
Well, I aim for every baseball article to double as performance art. So that's great news.
Mission accomplished. Well, it was so good to be back in the saddle tonight with you guys. I really appreciate you both, and I'm looking forward to a fun Philly season here talking baseball with you guys. And thank you all, listeners to Hittin' Season, for sticking with us every week and for giving Justin and Liz your love these last few weeks. And we're going to continue on here. And, it's going to be a little slow getting back into the saddle. So there may not be a midweek Hittin' Season the next couple weeks. I'm going to try and work that in. But as that all gets worked out, we'll figure things out here over the next couple of weeks and months, and continued success. We'll still be rocking and Dirty Inning and all the great stuff we're doing over at the Patreon. We hit 100 patrons on the Patreon this week, so we got a little bit of a milestone there. So thank you all who are Patreon members of Hittin' Season for doing that and signing up on the $5 a month tier to get the bonus podcasts and all the other material that we are sending your way over at the Patreon, which of course you can get to by going to patreon.com/hittin'season. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for episode number 456. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to y'all next time here on Hittin' Season.